The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And our featured guest for today is no stranger to danger, but this is the first time we've really got to sit down and have a one-on-one chat. And, you know, we've always been bumping into each other across multiple webinars upon webinars upon webinars over the years. And, you know, I think it's perfect timing because the amount of work I know that you're putting out right now is incredible. So joining us for today's show, we have Mrs. Rachel Renee Gonzalez, the visionary co-founder of The Market Movers, Trinidad and Tobago's first online green grocer. And since launching in 2009, Rachel has built a powerful platform that connects local farmers directly to homes and businesses, making fresh, locally grown produce more accessible than ever. She's also the mind behind Farm and Function TT, a frozen food line that celebrates local ingredients and Market Movers design, a venture that helps elevate local food brands through professional packaging and branding, making buy local a global standard. She has also been unnoticed or gone unnoticed by Ernst & Young as she was crowned Miss Emerging Entrepreneur of the Year and most recently received the Anthony Sabra Award for Entrepreneurship in 2025, which is one of the region's most prestigious honors. So ladies and gentlemen, listen, the girl has been killing it. Rachel, how are you doing?
Hi, Karen. I'm good. I'm good. Pretty good. I'm glad to finally, have this meetup. As I said, when Karen and I only see him workshops, I was like, Karen presenting, that means I need to come good. Come good, right? So I think this is good timing, good energy. So, I mean, you survived an earthquake last week, so.
Crazy.
That was just, and I love how professional he was. He still messaged me on the day, like, can't do the interview. You're going to push him to sleep. Sorry, but I was in the middle of an earthquake. And I was like, who does that? And I mean, it's a testament to technology, right? That we can reach out even when we're in the middle of an earthquake.
Listen, it's insane. The whole entire experience is insane. But no, exactly what you said. Just being able to have the technology and to get everybody just a click away, a message away, we can get things done. And I mean,
even happy you're just, okay.
Yeah, man, and I'm thankful that I'm back in my place now, and our condo has sustained like very minimal damage. So you know, kudos to that because I've seen some of the other places.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my goodness.
People are blessed right now.
You know, it's, and but you know what? I think what was really interesting to me is I'm in a place right now where there's a collection of digital entrepreneurs from around the world doing a wide assortment of things. Two of my really good friends that I've made, one is a travel vlogger who that's all he does is travel vlog. That's all he does. He edits for companies, but travel vlogs, and he travels around the world. And the other guy I hang out with is a cancer engineer. He's from Moldova, and he's a cancer engineer for a German cancer research firm. And we, like, again, and we're all just working, right?
Yeah.
So what was interesting with the earthquake was everybody just kind of picked up. As if this wasn't interesting enough, when you're talking to everybody was like, you know, they're just picking up and they're just going somewhere else. And, like, nobody was missing a beat. And I've also seen some people say, you know, the earthquake scared the living daylights out of them. And they've picked up and just moved to another country.
Wow. Like,
they've just...
like, I'm out.
Yeah, that's it. And they're in a whole next country. And, again, I think, you know, just after the earthquake, seeing these things really made me say, we really do live an amazing time. Where technology is enabling things that we never would have thought possible even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, you know? And I think this conversation has been one of those conversations where I don't think when we think of agriculture, we don't put technology or understand how technology fits into it. And again, you're the perfect person to kind of shed some light. So let's start off. For the people who have never heard your story before. Let's give them, you know, let's get them caught up. So how did you go about starting your entrepreneurial journey? How did that all begin for you?
So our collective motto is we'll work for food. So, I mean, we work for money too, of course, but food has always been that thing, right? Growing up, I was a greedy child. I would eat my brother's portion, although he was older. You know, food was just this very interesting thing for me. Being able to, you know, my family would have a backyard garden. We would grow our own food. We would sit down at the dinner table. We would, you know, share a meal. And I've seen me been able to, like, convince my dad of something with a pineapple upside down cake, or, you know, just how important food is to really tell those stories. So I've been using food to, like, bring people together, to get my way, to figure out life, because sometimes you invite someone for coffee or lunch and they will tell you everything. So growing up in that environment where food was important, I understood where food came from. My grandfather was a farmer. My brother is a farmer. But right away, I saw a lot of inequality around food. So when I go to the grocery store, the baigan or the sweet pepper that my brother was growing is being sold at 400% more than what he's selling it at. And, you know, he's the one doing all the work. So I never really understood that gap. And I really, you know, I didn't know it then, but that's kind of what triggered my entrepreneurial journey. I had to go away to college. You know, your parents tell you get a degree. We don't care if you're going to run a business. You need a degree. I did sciences. So I was studying biology at the time. And I, you know, you have your electives. And I took international relations. And there I met so many different people. And one of the cultures we had, which obviously I initiated, was a potluck. So everyone, you know, there was someone from Korea, someone from all over, who would sort of bring something that they cook at home or something that's traditional. And again, food remained that part of, you know, I ended up studying international relations. I wanted to join the UN and save farmers and help food systems and just sort of bring that equality. Because, you know, you're dreaming big at 21. And when I came back home, I couldn't get a job, right? My dad wasn't well, so I came back home and I didn't get the UN job. I was volunteering at the YMCA. At the time, you know, when I met my business partner, my first job was the night shift in Republic Bank. You know, I met him here and he was from Las Cuevas and he would bring fresh fish to work. My brother would grow the seasonings. We started putting that together and pretty soon, you know, this became more exciting than working in the bank. And I was like, you know, we could do a business. I just came from New York. I saw how, you know, there was companies like Fresh Direct that's only 5 years older than us. And they were integrating tech into bringing food to persons throughout the New York area. You order online and they delivered. So we couldn't afford a store. I told David, you know, let's build a website and see how this goes, right? Unfortunately for us, this was 2009 in Trinidad and Tobago. People didn't even really have personal computers or personal credit cards. But because I knew it was happening in another part of the world, I knew eventually it would trickle down here. And what happened is the government actually gave out a grant to lots of persons to get a personal computer at home. And you would get this grant, you get a computer, and that immediately just opened up Trinidad. And I think that was a prime example of digitization at hand and how business had more access to the internet. They could research recipes. Food Network came to Trinidad and Tobago. All of a sudden people want sage and mint and all these like interesting ingredients that I was already using. And I was like, well, maybe there's a market here. David and I, you know, we continued. We went to the, you know, the youth business programs, the this, the that.
Namaskar.
You know, we went online. We sent it out to an email out to my family members because we worked in the bank and I went to college in the States. I got that integration of technology and I saw how well technology worked. In agriculture, it's a little different. You know, we started uploading the images to the website and, you know, the culture here is to go to the market and pick up the stuff and touch and smell and feel. So we did a money back guaranteed. We focus on the images of the, when I looked at the websites abroad that had, you know, was selling food, the pictures were amazing. And anyone can attest that when they come to Market Movers or they come to Farm and Function, that the visuals, the, you know, the reality of it and the accurate images to sort of entice persons. And food is perfect to do that because people are always hungry. You know, you're always wondering what to eat next, right? And that's really how the business started. A customer, we would always track our data. So because we had this online, and I mean, it's a jot form embedded in a free Yahoo website. So please know this is not some big high-tech, you know, coded website. But we use the data, and we use it to figure out, wow, we're selling a lot of tomatoes, or we're selling more cucumbers. How do we work with the farmers now to grow it the way that our customers want, grow it, you know, fresh off the farm? And that's what we did. We built it bit by bit. A customer called us one day and said, and this is where, as an entrepreneur, you have to listen to the cues. You have to look at those cues, right? And she said her husband was diagnosed with cancer. Cancer was like this, you know, you knew of someone, and now it's so directly, you know, you're directly impacted by it, right? And she needed to make smoothies. In Trinidad, we make punches, which is lots of condensed milk. It's not really healthy. But she started consuming way more fruits in this format. You know, so that sort of triggered Farm and Function. We built this agro-processing company. We started cutting up fruits, freezing it. We improved any freezing technology. Now you can find Farm and Function in most retailers, PriceSmart. We also export regionally across the Caribbean. We're about to export to Guyana. We just got our first distributor there. So it's pretty exciting to see how food has sort of brought us there. But technology has been just so embedded in everything we do. We track down to the sugar content of the fruit. What is the best tasting when the sugar is at this stage? You know, we document, we track, and those things are very important in agriculture. So coming to that Farm and Function brand, all these SMEs, all these food SMEs were like, how did you guys do this? How did you build a local brand, improve the marketability, the packaging? How can we do that?
So now we help SMEs, food SMEs all across the Caribbean with their branding, their packaging design, all that stuff, and their marketability, because when we create this community of local producers, it just strengthens what we do. And we track their data too, how much sales they've made, how, you know, how they've grown, how they've improved. And, you know, they now have multiple products in their line and they have new staff. And these are all indicators of, you know, that agriculture is well viable. And there's so many layers in the Caribbean, in Trinidad and Tobago, that we sort of now monitor and figure out how we can improve. And technology, as I said, is a big part of that process. So in a nutshell, that's kind of how it all happened. And it's hard to tell my story any shorter than that. But as you said, you know, receiving the Anthony Sapka Award has just been this fun agri entrepreneur. It's just, you know, it's incredible. It's a pretty big deal. And the awards are in June. So I'm just sort of, you know, getting excited about building up to that accomplishment. So
listen, and again, it's great for people to hear the story, because a lot of times we don't get to hear the success stories of many people. And then when it is told, it's in smaller rooms. So anytime we can get on a platform and share our story and share and show people, you know, how we were able to come from the ground up. And I like to hear the stories of a lot of the newer entrepreneurs. I don't like to hear about the family money that came down. Like, people want to hear from people. people really want to hear, you know, how a lot of the newer entrepreneurs have been able to build their businesses and leverage into technology. Even before I even knew who you were, I was a customer of the Market Movers. And it was because, like, when I first came to Trinidad, I used to love going to the market. You see, coming down to COVID times, I absolutely hated going to the market, and I've never gotten to like going back to the market after that. Yeah. So I wasn't going to the market to order my provisions, my fruits, and whatnot. I was only ever going on Market Movers and ordering the products, because for me, the biggest problem you guys solved was now I don't have to go to the market where I'm bumping up on everybody. And again, nobody knows, no, everybody's in everybody's personal space in the market. There's no such thing, right?
Yeah. There's no such thing as personal space when you're with a vendor.
No. So the fact that we were always getting consistent quality food, because as you said, Caribbean people, it's touch, it's feel, it's whatever they got to do, knock, whatever they got to do to tell if it's right, shake. You know, the fact that you're getting high quality on delivery and knowing that you could trust the quality of your services is huge. And I could imagine, you know, what the transition would have been like for that to even happen for you. So, you know, being as the business was technology first, having the website in a jot form, what were some of the early challenges that you've had in getting the adoption for people to start doing?
Yeah, I think you have to meet people where they are in technology. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to create solutions, especially in the tech space, it's kind of like, okay, you have to accept that this is where people are, right? I mean, David likes to call me an Obio woman, because I almost kind of envision what would it will look like for my business to work. And it's almost like that grant for computers, or, you know, the banks starting to, you know, give credit cards. These things happen and you have no control over it as an entrepreneur. But it's almost like I knew customers, I had to talk to them on the phone and I had to explain to them why this worked, why is it important, why pesticide-free matters, why my cucumbers cost $3 more than the traditional, you know, markets. But there's a reason why, right? There's this responsibility attached to it. There's this traceability. And I think explaining that to persons and again, using pictures. So I would text people pictures like fresh off the farm. So they kind of got a sense. And I think imagery was one of the first tech things, right? You printed a picture and it was this thing you could constantly look at and reflect on. And you understood that this technology helped, right? So with images, it's kind of what we utilize a lot in our, and even with our farmers now, they can send a picture of, you know, a disease or a challenge they're having on the farm. Mm. And we can analyze it and say, this is what you need to do. We're going to do schedule a farm visit for you. We're going to, you know, work with you to kind of improve on that. So the tech, yes, you have to meet persons where they are, of course. But I do think you have to also envision where you want them to be, because if you don't, you're not going to figure out that road or that path. And I remember when I started building websites, the first thing I did, it was a boys club back in 2009, right? You know, only the guys knew how to build websites or engineers and things like that. So what I did was I met someone who, he actually stormed my birthday party, and I found out that he was in tech. And I took him out to coffee and I was like, let me pick your brain, let me, whatever. And he's now our, you know, CTO and works with us remotely. But I find that when you can't solve it or connect the customer with the tech, you sometimes have to get someone to help you build that inroad and figure out that process. And I think with Market Movers, you know, David always says, we cut and go through everywhere we go. You know, we build a path where we go. So it's almost like you have to find your own path when it comes to technology. And with building websites, you know, the first thing he taught me was, everything is just finding the solution, finding the thread, finding the path. And I think when you do that technical building of something, you get to visualize it, you get to communicate it now to your customers. And I think that's very important. The technical side of things and how things flow and how they're built out is very important. So I apply that into the realness of agriculture, which can be very variable, very... You know, now we have multiple web pictures of mushrooms, let's say, because each week the farmer may bring brown ones, white ones, oyster mushrooms.
Yeah.
So instead of, we have multiple images so that when those things change, we can update it on our website very quickly. You know, yeah. Our the section is already up, and I think a lot of prisons build websites and think it's supposed to just stay like that forever. But just like a room, you would paint it, you sweep it, you clean it up, you know? And I think our website has been a testament to that. We continue to excite customers through the platform. And these are standard sales things that work in natural ways, but we're doing it in a digital format. So
to kind of keep on that topic of how you guys have evolved, you know, what are some of the big evolution or big milestones that you guys have had from when you started from 2009 to where you are at today? Because from a website jot form, there's a lot that's changed. So what are
from
some
my
of
my mother's
the...
gallery where we started the business? And she was like, what are you doing in the gallery? I'm like, we're going to start a business, you know? And she's like, but you're in your pajamas. Like, I was just on the computer in my pajamas all day. And she was like, this girl got a college degree and is in her pajamas, you know, running a business. So I think milestones are important. But the reason that I don't think that there are always these big life-changing moments. Of course, the awards and those things tend to sort of propel you into this new dimension. All of a sudden, David and I were in rooms that we would never normally get into. And, you know, I think one thing that we did was we remained ourselves. We didn't try to conform to the room. We knew we probably didn't belong there at first. Or, you know, those things that you tell yourself.
Yeah,
so we've definitely, you know, those awards have been pivotal moments for us. But we celebrate every little thing in here. Like, it's kind of insane. So every time an order even goes off, it's like we still, ooh, a new order. Like, we still, you know, someone just spent money on our website without us. We put everything there and it's just working. And I think when you find that model for your business, it's like, it may not always be consistent, but there's growth, right? And I think celebrating those incremental wins is where, wow, we sustained it, wow. And you have to set those measures. So for instance, order fulfillment is a KPI we use. We maintain a 99% order fulfillment rate. When it drops below that, so every time a customer complains or they say they don't get something in their order, it's documented each week.
Yeah.
We see, okay, out of 100 orders, 98 of them had 100% order fulfillment. And those are the measures that we use. Yeah. I think when we meet those KPIs, those are some of those pivotal moments. Like, wow, 3 years in a row, we've been able to maintain a 95% order fulfillment rate, you know? Yeah. So you have to set those measures. But life-changing, I would say, definitely... we went from online to offline. We opened a click and collect store after the pandemic. So imagine, Karen, your whatever orders you get for a month during the pandemic, we got daily on our website for 2 years straight. So we scaled during the pandemic astronomically. And the reason being is because we had the systems, the platform, the technology already in place. And you saw all these other delivery services popping up. But because we were ready is why we were able to scale. And I think that's an important part. And when I told David, I was like, wow, for 2 years straight for us to hold true to this, it was a testament and a huge pivotal moment for us that we had a formula. But when we saw the orders start to plateau and even sort of, you know, as business started coming back out, you know, we launched a click and collect store. We just moved into a 3-story building. And, you know, to move from my mom's gallery to this, you know, it was David's back room. Then we got a small commercial space. We started Pharma Function and we were pretty much like writing receipts and cutting a pawpaw, like, you know, a few feet away. And it didn't make sense anymore. We outgrew the space. We took the leap. We moved into another space that sort of expanded again. We now in a 3-story building. We have a food studio now to you know, help SMEs. We have a cafe, a farm-to-table cafe downstairs. And I mean, we're still not there yet. And I think that's an important thing. There is no there, right? There's yours here, your hair. You're not there. And I think for today, I'm you know, we're very proud of the growth we've been able to maintain. But, you know, things are constantly changing in our world, in agriculture, you know, and in the environment, the ways our farmers are affected. We're now shifting into training our farmers, empowering our farmers, building those connections. And you have to constantly keep improving on those things. So, yeah.
I wanna take it back to a personal note, because again, you're building this business, and a business that I'm sure if you told people in 2008 that you were trying to do this, they would have just laughed at you and told you it's never gonna work.
I was told so many times. They were like, Trinidadians are never going to buy food on the internet. Guess who's on the internet? KFC. They're buying KFC on the internet also. You know what I mean? They're buying fast food. So, I mean, it was a really good moment when I got to go back to that banker and be like, I told you, you know, we sold 1.5 million pounds of local food on the internet. And imagine if
that's
I listened
crazy.
To that. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So you have to really believe, and seeing models that work in other markets are so important. And I really like that you have
this
global perspective. And I know why people say, you know, the Facebooks and the this and the that. And sometimes you do have to think that big, because it's important to know that it can be done. It can be proven. And if you're doing it from scratch, know that it's going to take twice as long. You know, so.
No, you're absolutely right. If you're doing it from scratch, it's going to take twice as long.
Or maybe three times.
Or maybe...
Maybe
and then trying to and then trying to convince a region who is usually very tech averse, you know, just adds another level of complexity that I don't think most people have solved. I think there's a lot of we still haven't had that big. There's just not like what I, you know, I'm enjoying the fact that I made the trip out to Asia, and I'm just a country like you can't tell me in the Caribbean people are too old. No, because I'm in another country and I'm watching the old people. I'm watching people in a wheelchair roll up and use their phone to make payments. I'm watching people buy crickets and locusts with digital payments. So we can do it in the Caribbean.
And 40% of our customer base is the reality, you know. You would be surprised. Yes, it's family, usually they start, you know, we create the account for them. One, see, you just added this. So you watch, I mean, it's a thing. And I, when you think, okay, only this group of people could be my, do not.
Recording in progress.
So we have customers as young as like 8 years old going on our website saying, "Mommy, I'm gonna order my smoothie packs," or "I'm gonna," and these are our future customers, right? So
wow.
Yeah, and they all have tablets. They, you know, they
well, and they're influencing the decision maker.
Exactly.
So no, that's huge. Now again, you there's a lot of challenges that you have been facing. And one of the biggest things you could do is find mentors, find people to kind of model after or talk to, you know, who has been some of your mentors throughout this journey or some of your biggest influences to propel you to where you are today?
I mean, I know it's going to sound corny. I mean, you were one of them, I think, early on, just sort of showing the possible. I was like, you were making tech look cool, which I found, I mean... It was very difficult to do because there's all this trust issues around it and those challenges. Yeah. But at the same time, you made it relatable and very doable. It wasn't this, oh, you had to be looked this particular way if you're in tech. So definitely that helped a lot. You know, my dad has been one of my biggest, you know, I talk about my dad all the time. He passed away, unfortunately, 10 years ago. But he is the one that really told me I could do this, that I could start this business. And, you know, that has sort of, you know, he was a soldier, so the discipline side is, you can't do this without the discipline. Like, you can, it could look nice, cute, however, but if you are not disciplined and consistent, the day you do not check your website is the day everything goes wrong on it, right? And I think that is really important, that consistency. I've had, you know, like, Dale Loughlin, she was on the panel for Youth Business of Trinidad and Tobago when I pitched for my first loan. And I think that is a big validation as an entrepreneur. I now sit as a director on Youth Business of Trinidad and Tobago. So 16 years ago, I was pitching, please help me with my business. And, you know, now to be able to, like, full circle, she's sort of always believed in me, always, saw, you know, kept with me over those 16 years, mentored me. You know, Georgina Terry was one of my mentors as well. Oh, my gosh, like, days when I couldn't even get out of bed, Georgina was the one, you know, really pushing. And I just asked, I'm very curious. And I think even if you find someone doing something, even I've gotten a lot of no's, like, you know, hi, just trying to figure out this, or would you be willing to have a cup of coffee? No, I'm too busy. And I don't take it personally, because usually I end up talking to that person somehow later on.
Yeah.
You know, you always end up on a table with them somewhere or something like that. So I've had a lot of persons guiding me. My mom, of course, now she's older and she's not so well as before, but now we talk, you know, so even her guidance, because I think growing up in the Caribbean, your parents don't share a lot with you early on, and now she's telling me all these life gem pieces,
and like, you're like, where nuggets. Was I?
And I'm just like, you can just tell me this at 25, like, I mean, but yeah, so I think, but you can learn from everyone. I mentored very early in my business, and my mentees have actually taught me more sometimes than actual business people, you know. So you've seen them at that stage when you were hopeful and you believed. And I think it's really important to be around, you know, we have a lot of interns at our company. We take on the YAP students from the agriculture program. And they inspire me a lot too, because I'm like, okay, they still believe. The youth still believe. I think when the youth still have some hope, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to give up just yet. You know, I'm 41 now. It's just been, I think, always knowing that you're continuously learning. I do not stop. I am, like, hungry for, you know, in a lot of aspects of my life, because I think the more I know, the less mistakes I make, the less, you know, challenges. I mean, you're still gonna have the challenges, but I learn how to handle it a lot better. Yeah. Definitely.
And you see, and that is so huge, man. There's a lot that you learn about yourself on this entrepreneurial journey in ways that you could have never prepared for.
No.
And especially because, as you said, we have to keep on learning, and you have to today, because every single day, something changes. Literally. Every single day, to the point where, I mean, I used to be like, when I turned 19 and I got into the smartphone industry back in Toronto, I used to be one of those guys, like, just reading every single tech blog, as many as I can, refresh every hour. Oh God, who has a new article? But now it's like, when is this going to stop?
Yeah.
Because
Kusumi or settle a little.
A half day something. Because and it's not just one area. There's so many more tech areas now than ever before that are all integrated some way, somehow. And there's a change every single day. And it's getting to the point where these changes are impacting you no matter what.
Like, there's a new tariff every day now. There's a new Like, I'm so, tripping to Guyana. Yeah. And I'm just like, what's happening now on this line? Or what's happening now in trade? And you have to be aware. Yeah, you have to be constantly. But I agree. I think the more we can have some stability, and I try to create that environment in my business where we sort of future-proof ourselves like quarterly, because just because change is happening so quickly, but we stick to it. We do not move from the plan in that quarter. Now, obviously, we can tweak if something major kind of happens, but we follow through. And sometimes we know it's not going to work, or we see where the problem is, but we have to collect enough data to make that next informed decision. And I think being able to hold out as best as you can, plugging in the right resources at the right time, that will give you that residual. And that's why online and tech is so, I can be in bed and someone in France can order, spend $300 on the website while I'm asleep for their family's hair. So you have to create that environment for that continuity, that continuous growth and value add. And it sounds onerous, I know. But just remember the jot form. Before the jot form was an Excel spreadsheet that we would print and people would write it in. We would go to each bank and take orders. And of course, people handwriting is all how. Then we changed it to a check system where you're just writing in the numbers. That, again, proved to have errors. So just start. Start wherever the tech is at the moment that people are actually using. I think it's a lot of us build things that the future customer, yes, you can build it eventually, but just at least start where people are. Like, where is your customer right now? Like, we did this whole thing on the website for the Gen Zs, right? They're the ones actually coming in the store to see how they feel and what to order. They do not order in advance. They absolutely do not. But I could predict the auntie who's 70 years old. I know what she orders every single week. I know how she wants her sweet potatoes. She has not moved from that, right? So I think do not definitely meet your customer segment, each segment where they are. It's not necessarily having this one fit solution for everyone because it, you know, WhatsApp, we still get WhatsApp orders. People still call us and you have to find those systems that sort of integrate into your overall tech system that you're using.
And I'm glad you said that, because that is a thing that I do not think Caribbean businesses understand.
No.
You have customers that are coming to you from so many different directions. It's not like 20 years ago where they only heard about you from a radio ad, TV ad, a newspaper, billboard. Now they can hear about you from a WhatsApp group, a forward too many times, a Google. There's so many ways your customers can get to you.
Yeah.
And what happens is when you don't understand the customer journey today, you can't prepare for it.
No.
Right? If you don't know how to show up on a Google search, you're almost pretty much invisible. Now, if you don't know how to show up in an AI search, you're pretty much invisible, you know? So I want to ask you, you know, what are some of the biggest tech advancements within agriculture that you've been seeing that you're excited for, and how do you think it's going to impact the local sector? Is it going to upend any jobs? Because, you know, that's our first thing. Every single piece of new technology upgrade, when we think about in the Caribbean, it usually means somebody's job is being lost. So well, talk us through some of those tech advancements and what does that look like in the local sector?
So technology in the Caribbean, it's not like this one channel thing, right? It can happen again where they are. So when we first started, it was like the farmer would show up, cash exchange, you know, you're calling the order, maybe cash exchange, you weigh it there, all that stuff, right? A lot of tech, I think, is just with efficiency tools, just sort of average orders, setting up those smart contracts with our suppliers. So like if on average we use 50 butterhead lettuce, our farmer knows consistently they can do that. And I think connecting the data with the demand and the output is one thing that we've been able to sort of massage and get to a more efficient point. WhatsApp has been a great tool for us with farmers. But I think packaging, like how farmers are storage, post-harvest handling, how they package and market their goods. You know, I saw a farmer started to do oyster mushrooms. And, you know, when you sell it by the pound, it's a lot and it's expensive. And I saw he does these $20 packs and it looks like a lovely head. I mean, I know it's not a lot of mushrooms. When I take it out, I'm like, yeah, this is for one outlet. But he's found a way to position the product in a price point that still creates, you know, someone may try it and it's like, wow, these mushrooms taste great. I never had mushrooms like this before. I'm vegan, I'm fasting. And we have all these cultural things in the Caribbean that you can play to and expand on. So that's packaging, I think, and that's why we focus on packaging a lot and compliance, food safety. You know, my neighbor is exporting pimentos. Like, I see them pack up pimentos in boxes, and this is flying to Miami. Like, it's insane when you think about the ways in which food products are being moved and distributed and technology. We think drones, obviously. We have the drones. We can map out. We can see, you know, if there's any damage to crops. You can track and see if a farmer really was flooded, about lasers that test the soil and, you know, all this stuff. And that is the future, and it is something that can evolve, and it exists in very large operations and monoculture systems. But I think with technology, it's always that human sighted. I mean, farmers are the first, like, tech people there, just to be clear. They understood seasons. They were using technology long before, because they had to feed everybody. It was actually the most important role, right?
Yeah.
So I think it doesn't have to always look like robots and that sort of thing, right? It can be simple improvements and tweaks that can sort of evolve. One thing is climate resilience and seeing farmers use technology like, control environments and what they're doing in terms of that space. I find very innovative, very interesting. We do packaging design for a brand that does microgreens. And I'm just like, this man is now doing dehydrated powders. And it's like, microgreens have very high nutritional content. So he's turned something very small but high value and sort of positioned it through the packaging, through the different ways in which he presents it. So dehydrating it into a powder, add it to your smoothie. And I think the innovations is this food preservation. There's a lot of tech in that, blast freezing. We now have a shelf life of 18 months on our products. And as I said, tech does not have to look like, you know, the same. We think, you know, a simple thing like an app that just sort of tracks your weights and what you put on your scale, you know, these are really quick things that I see farmers are using a lot to really, information is power, right? So the more information they can gather is really important. And sometimes we hit or miss, right? Like, for instance, we launched frozen dragon fruit, and I'm just saying, we know the trends of dragon fruit. The searches alone, dragon fruit and health, dragon fruit, new trending product, right? It was like a few years ago.
Yeah.
So we launched frozen dragon fruits, and, you know, the market still, we're now getting it into stores. The popularity is now building. But again, with agriculture and food, you can do the tech, design the packaging, work with the farmers. But right now we're stuck with the markets because we import a lot of dragon fruit, because before there was no local production of it. And sometimes, you know, farmers have to pay that price, businesses pay that price, but it's the consumer to now trust that, okay, if you see a local version or a local alternative to something, how important it is to try it, to support it, to buy it, especially, you know, quality. You can set the same standards. And I think it is important for us to hold ourselves and Caribbean food businesses accountable, that you're not just, because it's local, it must, you know, you have to still meet that general standard, meet the customer where they are. If they are custom getting it in this size bag, this price, you have to go deeper into that. And I think, you know, as I said, technology can present itself so many ways in agriculture. And if we limit ourselves to think it has to be this one way, you know, we're missing out on the food on the table, literally.
Yeah, no, for sure. Now, we know that over the past couple of years, the biggest buzzword in the world has been artificial intelligence, AI. And AI has changed every single industry in the entire world. Two-part question. First, you know, what are some of the big advancements in AI and agriculture? And how has AI impacted people just on a regular day-to-day level? Like, I know for me, I remember my friend had a plant. The plant was dying. I saw all these white mites on them. I don't know a thing about nothing. Took a pic, ChatGPT. Oh, I learned what they are. Yeah. And they're attacking the plant, right? As an example. But yeah, what are some of the big AI advancements in agriculture, and what are some of the ways that AI has impacted just regular people on a day-to-day?
Yeah. I mean, I've been a little stuck on the AI just because, I mean, I use it. It's just I've been stuck because I do have this millennial mental barrier that sort of, you know, I learned from, you know, that trust of, you know, the computers and then the robots and whatnot, right? There is that fear around it. So I decided to sort of embrace it. And I think when I see the strength in AI is when there's a lot of data, human analysis can, there's always this partiality, and I see it, you know? I on my team, we have different persons who will analyze the data, and their interpretations are literally
very different.
Like, and I've made major mistakes trusting personal interpretations of data. And I think, so my business partner and I, I believe in high value inputs, high quality outputs, right? So that the customer knows that they're getting a high value good. David is the guy who goes to the grocery and buys the 2-for-1 branded offers, which, no judgment. I'm not judging you, but I know that's going to expire in 2 days and I cannot drink that much juice in 2 days. That's just me, right? He now thoroughly believes in that aspect, right? So his perception on pricing when we look at the data is y'all are overcharging people. And I would say, you're not my customer. And I have already quantify the value of what we're putting into this. And when I say expensive, I mean, we are on par with the local grocery stores. It's just more the traditional markets because they don't have the packaging layering, we deliver it to your door. Yeah. There's all these other layers. But David will see that part of it. And I think data analysis is the number one way that I use AI. So wastage, you know, so composting is a big part of our process. We compost all organic matter, the factory, at the store, the cafe, we're composting it to turn it into compost for the farmers. If we don't have enough of the bins, we do it ourselves, we'll compost it ourselves and stuff like that. So I think data analysis is a huge way that AI can help in agriculture, and finding a way to plug in market data with the supply. And you're seeing opportunities and areas where the government had just launched their national e-commerce strategy, utilizing, you know, how do we integrate more tech and things like that. But you have to figure out, I think for us, it's really about the data that we currently have. We now have 15, 16 years of data. I mean, the first 5 years, you know, it was on a job form. So, but now we have way better systems in place. So pandemic, post-pandemic, you know, we have some really critical data that we're using to sort of now bridge the supply with the market. And our vision, big vision, is to solve food security in the Caribbean. That's my, you know, superhero. That's what I'm going to be known for. You know, what you tell yourself. But, I mean... it's not something that is a one-win. It's chipping away at it for the future person who's going to, knowing that I'm not going to necessarily be the hero in the end, right? I think that data analysis is so important. So we use AI in that context.
Yeah.
I've used it, as I said, to bridge you the market research in terms of what persons are searching for around health and wellness. And I think market meets you know, the farmer is an important part of the puzzle. So we're hoping to create this hub where we bridge now the food SMEs with the farm supply, and not just only supply it, but bring food safe, standardization, quality control, all the things that the global market now expects around food and food safety. You know, I've worked on projects to build a website called CaribbeanFoodSafety.com, where we help food SMEs find out what lab does these tests. These are things I've seen businesses shut down for. Entrepreneurs just give up. I go to food and chemistry and just be like, I can't do this. There's no way I have to spend all this money to test my tamarind ball. You know what I mean? So while I'm like negotiating with a tamarind farmer, or, you know, all these things. And I think the more we can bridge that gap and use the data, and I think AI has guided us to understand where the markets are, where we think the future of Caribbean food is, nostalgia goods. Yeah. Well, these are some really key opportunities. Wellness is, you know, as huge. I said, when you look at the blender today, the blender has a smoothie button now. You remember when the microwave got the popcorn button?
Yeah.
Orville read it, and he probably was flipping in his, you know, in his house. And that's how I felt. I felt like, okay, smoothies are a thing now, and my frozen fruits can satisfy a market. It can meet the market where it is. But then you see where companies like Daily Harvest, you know, yes, they do those convenience food items, but now they just launch a cafe. Because again, that experiential, what are the Gen Zs doing? They want to come and feel, they want to know, they want to experience. And it's why you're probably halfway across the world too as well, right? You have to explore and see what's out there. And I think that's how we kind of leverage AI. You know, I have to design a booth for TIC. Someone showed me how I can just sort of use AI for things like that, whereas before I would sit and sketch it. And, you know, so learning to let go of those more tedious daily things is important. But I think for agriculture, AI is the data analysis, knowing, you know, the best output of a tree, the right variety of mango. You know, we track our outputs in the factory down to by the liter, by the weight, by the ounce. So we know the right pawpaw, the right variety that will get the output that is required. But we have so much data that we, if we were to interpret it ourselves, David may say, yes, this pawpaw is great. But it's because he likes the farmer, not so much because the data correlates. And I think it's just discerning that I think when it comes to data analysis, you really do have to have that, you know, very straightforward approach to analyzing it.
I want you to hold that thought. We got to take a quick commercial break. We have a few more questions with Miss Rachel. We'll be back with more Digital World after this.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.
You're on the Digital World on Freedom 106.5 FM. And we are continuing on with Miss Rachel Rennie from D Movers. So now, Rachel, when it comes to, I want to bring this back to getting people to think about the personal side of AI in the home, right? You know, when it comes to agriculture, when it comes to fruits, plants, what are some of the cool things that people could do at home with AI right now?
I think like a big challenge is businesses like figuring out what to cook at people like every day or what to eat. I believe cooking is a human right. Everyone should be preparing at least one home cooked meal a week. I think it will help the world overall. Possible, but I think knowing what to cook is a big barrier to why people don't cook. Of course, the dishes included. So I think there's ways I've entered like a list of ingredients, like give me 10 recipes for my email marketing to send out to customers with these recipes, with these ingredients. So those are some fun ways, like one fun way that I would like, you know, you have these 5 ingredients in your fridge, you can use it and it will find you every single possible recipe. You can put in if it's vegan, if it needs to be whatever. So those are one fun way. A lot of persons are being diagnosed with different types of chronic illnesses. And I think when they go to the doctor, the doctor's telling them to have blueberries or strawberries. And, you know, like a granny calling me going, is he saying $85 was for four strawberries? Like, what does this doctor think, right? And I think finding the nutritional, something close based on your diet is a great way. So if you were diagnosed with something, you can know exactly the foods to eat, or you can enter, okay, is breadfruit similar to this? You know, so finding those local alternatives and the nutritional value of foods is really interesting. A great way is like going to the grocery now, you know, they say when you have that friend who reads the ingredients and they're like, blah, blah, blah. Now you can scan a nutrition button, you know, and see like exactly like what is, if this is harmful for you or your particular diet that you're on. And as I said, the more informed analyzing the data, it's tried and true. We now don't have to go back, you know, to the start to figure things out. So those are some of the fun ways, I think, persons around the food side of it, for sure. I think one thing is like pests, you know, finding pest solutions for farmers. Even a lot of our customers have backyard gardens and they're like, oh, but I tried to grow this thing and the caterpillars ate it out.
Yeah.
So there's ways you can find, you know, natural repellents, natural pesticides that you can utilize or for your home garden. So there's a lot of hacks around for sure that, you know, sometimes we feel like we could come up with everything. But when you have more options, it just sort of opens up your mind to better solutions. And I think daily we are supposed to be just solving problems. I feel like that's all we do all day. It's like, ooh, how to deal with this, how to combat this, how to prevent this from happening again. And I think AI plays a good role in just sort of giving us more options and opening up our mind around the food we eat, about the challenges we face. As I said, it does not have to always be a disease, but you know, physical ailments, what challenges you have, you know, your lactose intolerance, what are some fun ways? I mean, and we've seen vegans have literally like, they took that problem, I don't want to hurt animals anymore, and just went to the moon with it. Like, you know, I'm seeing like watermelon hams and all this crazy stuff, but yeah, it's pretty interesting. But I think AI can definitely be a great fun tool to figure out what to eat.
Yeah, like there's so many, you know, practical ways. Like you have in ChatGPT, if you're on the paid version, you have projects. One of my projects is a nutritionist called Gigi, right? Created an avatar. So everything I'm eating, I'm taking a picture of and giving it to Gigi. So I don't have to count the calories. I don't have to do all the tracking. Gigi's tallying up everything. I have a personal trainer named DJ. And so when I'm doing different workouts, I'll talk to Gigi and be like, hey, today's leg day. You know, what are we eating today?
I love that.
Right? I'll go and I'll tell her, hey, you know, I feel like salmon today. I need this amount of calories. You know, what are some of the options? When I go to the supermarket, I'm taking pictures of the actual so I can know whether it's good or not. Because funny story, right? Yeah. I'm not no big time chef. And, you know, plantain is something I never used to eat. Like I just like my family would always eat it. I was like, yeah, I'm out. Right. Like I never used to eat fried plantain. Listen, I committed blasphemy because I'm a plantain lover now. Right. But how I became a plantain lover. A friend made it a couple years ago and I tried it with a little bit of cinnamon when they, and I was like, yo, this actually tastes really good. So I went to the grocery store the next day and I'm like, yo, I want to make some fried plantain myself. I bought, you know, I thought you would buy plantain like you buy bananas. So I'm looking for the yellowest plantain I could possibly find with no blemishes. I go home immediately and I fry that up and I'm like, ugh.
That's not sweet. It's not gonna be sweet. No, yeah. No. So I remember
if I had AI, I could have, is this thing good to eat? Yes or no? You know, yeah. But yeah, go ahead.
No, yeah, that's perfect. A perfect example. I mean, like when the plantains turn black, you know, we'd be like, oh, we can't sell this to customers. And now we just listed override planting on the site and a black image. And that actually sells more than the right planting, than the green planting. So it's just exactly that, right? It's that you need to know, you know, what ChatGPT, what AI could definitely tell us. I remember I had to do a video on how to peel a pineapple.
Yeah.
I was like, adults don't know how to peel a pineapple, and you take for granted that the average person just must know how to peel a pineapple. No, they buy Farm and Function frozen pineapple because they don't want to peel a pineapple, or they don't, you know how. So
But that's important to know, because you know what? Anytime I go to the grocery store with one of my friends, they'll buy all the things from scratch. So they're buying peas, they're gonna shell their own peas, garlic. But I'm going in there, I'm like, yo, I'm not doing none of that. Give me the peeled garlic. Give me the cut up pineapple. Give me the cut up watermelon. I'm paying the extra.
And they're like, peeled garlic was just the biggest discovery in the history of, you know, time. It was like, I finished my meals faster. Like, yeah, it's so real. It's very real.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going through that. But now let's shift into getting into food sustainability, right? Mm-hmm. Given where we are in 2025, when you look at Trinidad and Tobago specifically, but also across the Caribbean, you know, what are your thoughts on our efforts on trying to become food sustainable as a region? And what do you think about our efforts as a country, on a country level?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of talk around it. There's a lot of buzz around the need for it. I think the first step is to limit our food waste. And that's literally how we started Farm and Function as well. When we wanted to launch, you know, we looked in the marketplace, we looked at the data. You know, they have like local municipal markets that have websites that have data. So we looked at that. We interviewed farmers. We got some data. And we found that pawpaw was, you know, the price was very low. It was a lot of wastage. Once it ripe up on you, nobody wants it. And I thoroughly believe that half of Trinidad either loves pawpaw or they hate it. I literally heard someone say this tastes like baby poop. You know, so I think there's a serious love-hate relationship with pawpaw. But what I would say is, the healthiest, elderliest people I know eat pawpaw every day. It's actually a very good fruit for digestion, for skin. For, you know, there's so many benefits. So when we launched that, it was really to reduce that food waste. Seeing, you know, a farmer go, wow, you know, I can actually grow this crop. It can be grown all year. You know, it's a little easier to grow than some longer term fruits. And it gave opportunity that there was a market. There's things like preserves where they use green pawpaw in processing now. So now a farmer doesn't even have to wait for it to ripe. They can sell this off. They know they can find a market for it. And I think that's where, you know, we saw those opportunities. Like, so food waste, reducing our food waste.
Yeah.
So finding value for things that we've sort of mastered and a way to have it consistently supplied, but also finding the value for it beyond just eating a pawpaw with a spoon or, you know, having a slice. And I think finding more ways to consume certain foods is where we can really find those values. So now, you know, we're talking with, and why we call it Caribbean fruits, we're speaking with, you know, farmers in Outer Dominica who can send passion fruit pulp directly to us, and working with other agro-processors who can now buy a 20-foot container, because we may not need a full 20-foot container, but we can share those resources. And I think that's the first way in food that we can build some sustainability in the Caribbean. We're literally throwing money away, where we don't have to now go and plant a million corn trees or plant a million to compete with this global market. We already have foods and ingredients here that, I mean, sea moss. Like, how much more, like, can there be a more trending food item right now? You know, and think about, like, we would just waste that. It would not be, there would be no value. So by enhancing the packaging, the marketability of these things, moringa, like nobody have a moringa tree left with leaves in the yard because people are just like raiding their moringa trees, you know. You know, people are exporting pimento flakes and all these things. And I think finding, looking at what we already have and creating value is an important food system, because we do have strong agriculture systems here in the Caribbean. We have to deal with a complete dry season, a complete rainy season. We've learned how to grow food within our climate, and now we need to find the value and again reduce some of the imports that replace that, right? So kids are getting apples in their lunch kits because a parent is saying that it doesn't melt, it doesn't spoil, right?
Yeah.
So what are the other local fruits that we can, that can replace the apple, you know, that can put in our lunch kit? Or what's the format that we can present it to kids in their lunch kits that bring that value? So I think around sustainability, reducing food waste is one of the top ways that I think we can do that. If we didn't find value for pawpaw, pineapple, passion fruit, guava, mango, it would, a lot of it would just be wasting away, you know. And I think that's an important, you know, looking at the value that we already have and how can we reduce that. Climate smart technologies, climate resilience is a big thing, mitigating forest fires. These are all things that affect farmers, Prairie Larceny, you know, all these things that, that really, and thinking about the environment, we're like, yes, we're going to clean up, but it's almost like, we have to clean up the systems first and then sort of out, because we can clean all around, but if the system doesn't, we don't find the value for the products. We don't empower persons to create food products that will bring that demand, you know? So I think it's really interesting and exciting time to be in food and tech for sure.
What are some of the key pieces of technology that you're seeing in the agricultural sector worldwide that you would like to see happening in Trinidad? And even if it's, you know, getting, you know, more logistics for farmers to sell digitally and meet people, not just in a market in a community, but, you know, anywhere that people are, you know, what are some of the things that you would say we need to start bringing into TNT that's doing well around the world?
Yeah, I mean, definitely that bridging the gap between restaurants and farmers. I think you're seeing some more innovation with apps like that. There are things that has to be considered, I think, for that model to work. You know, in larger countries, like there's more restaurants, more farmers, more connection like that. But when you open up something like that and like, say, for instance, the groceries can purchase the larger groceries, they're going to gobble up all of it. And it's not going to actually service those satellites and those smaller producers. So I think how we apply it is going to be important. And knowing that, you know, it's really about, you know, with the cost of food as well. And as I said, like putting that, if the restaurant can get more affordable food, and remembering that moment where, you know, my brother is selling bacon for $1 a pound on the market and someone is selling him that and it's $9 in the grocery, like, do the math, right? And you put that in a bag, slap a sticker on it, call it artisanal, you can sell that for $12. So I think it's also that value point and figuring out where the value needs to translate and who is responsible is very important with food systems. So apps that sort of bridge the producers and the farmers are important, but I do still think that there needs to be that intermediary, right? Because the farmer now, he needs to focus on growing, right? And I think the distribution of it, the handling of it, the lazing, is still a skill set. And people have a negative stigma on the middleman, let's say.
Yeah. But
I think informing and educating and improving the middle system is one of the things that we could definitely do. I saw an app with, I think it's in Ghana, and you can literally buy a farm online. And
that's insane.
The person, well, like buy a crop, a harvest, basically. So the farmer grows it, you invest in it, he sells it, you get this much back. And that's like something I saw. And someone was like, do you want to invest in a farm in Ghana? Or, and I was just like, when am I going to go there? And, you know, I'm trying to pop the air. And they were like, no, you never have to leave. You can literally grow and you can look, you get data on like what's selling in the market, where the values are and stuff like that. I mean, it's a risk in some instances, because of course, the farmers are vetted, you know, and those are the things like similar to your driver or your delivery service. You have to have that vetting process. And that's why I said, it's not just bridging, it's sort of having that standard that protects both sides, right? And most times it's the farmer that would be taken advantage of in a lot of instances, right? So,
That's so actually a very interesting application, you know.
Yeah, and I was thinking of doing it for market movement where customers could actually invest in a crop and sort of, you know, benefit. Buy a plant, you know, you pay for one plant or whatever, one seedling or whatever.
I could see that working, because I'm thinking of myself, like, I don't like to cook. The first, like, as soon as I have, like, that, and that's one of the things I love about Thailand, because the first thing I outsourced was food. Yes. I go to the grocery, I have the private chefs at the grocery, and it costs me, like, literally less than $50 to get a week's worth of food cooked for me, right? So if I want fresh ingredients, and I'm now, I don't have time, I'm in a condo, I don't have the place, I don't have the time, I don't have the green thumb, and I could just invest in a crop, and I'm getting back whatever that is brilliant.
Yeah, I'll send you the application. It was pretty cool.
Please. No, that's brilliant. And I have two more questions before we wrap up. I don't want to make this a political discussion, but like, with the election season upon us, what are some of the things, what are some of the policies that you would love to see come out to help build the agricultural sector in TNT moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, first off, a larger budget for the agriculture sector. we're always at the bottom of the, you know, investment pool. And I can't understand that there's some other priorities, of course, but food is, you know, the number one.
Yeah.
For me, in terms of long-term sustainability, so I think more resources dedicated to that. I think taking, protecting with imports. I do think that bringing in foods that we have. So like in Jamaica, for instance, if you're going to import a particular fruit or vegetable, you have to prove that there isn't enough local supply for you to maybe take on that venture, right?
Wow.
So you have to do your due diligence. You cannot just bring in something if there is a consistent local supply.
Yeah.
Of course, challenges around. I mean, there's support needed on both ends. I think farmer capacity building and just not just, yes, the grants and the funding is great. But I think building that capacity and that food safety, and you know, you see farmers like they won't meet compliance because they can't afford to put a toilet on their farm or simple things like that, you know. So it's really important that investment goes there. I think per-year larceny is a huge thing. We've lost so many farmers, you know, on the dumbest of thing, like for avocados, like I can't even.
That's insane.
Some of these stories is just really, you know, people literally lose their lives over certain crops. And it's kind of protecting the farmers, but again, it's integrating. And what we're hoping is that our group of farmers, we can start, you know, surveillance and helping them integrate the things that's going to limit the risk that they are exposed to, because we require the supply, right? But the demand sort of has to reach there. So we're working with a lot of more agro-processors locally that are really driven to support local, integrate more local into their systems, and not just bring in up jar flavoring to make their things right. But they use real fruit or they use real ingredients. So I think those building that demand and creating incentives for companies to support local, to use local or utilize maybe a certain percentage of local in their production is one way that we can improve on that. And then overall, I would say just Yeah, those are the main things, like protecting the imports. Because for sure, we're competing with billion-dollar companies here, and we can empower entrepreneurs all we want, but if we get on the shelf and we have to stand up next to a Dole or
Yeah.
and certain fruits are just protected, like that, berries, all these things. And I mean, there were things like luxury taxes and things like that that have gone on, but somehow it hasn't really trickled. I haven't seen it fully trickle down on the shelf. And then these companies can afford to bite the bullet, or they can afford to invest in those things, right? To bear that cost sometimes. So I think it's really protecting the medium scalable models that are working locally. And I'd say this all the time. You, as a startup in this environment, you can get support. There's startup this, larger companies of course have incentives and benefits, but it's the medium size. It's always, those in the middle who's always a balancing, either you're small or you're large. You're always, balancing that. And I think investing in medium scalable business models in the agriculture sector, I mean, yes, that includes myself as well, but I mean, the impact is astronomical. We have a network of 300 farmers. We have a network of over 200 and something SMEs across the region. So the impact is, incredible if you support businesses that are at that stage. And I think the SABGA Awards is a great testament to that. I mean, aside, the prize money is pretty great, but what it does is help businesses like us and entrepreneurs like us who would definitely invest that back into the system. And I'm hoping to even do, to youth business at Trinidad and Tobago. Hopefully we can do a grant for the next market movers. I'm hoping to put some of my winnings into that and really try to build out a community around agriculture. But politics doesn't matter, whichever side. I think everything comes down that it is personal responsibility. The consumer has more power than you can imagine. And I think we have to start choosing more local, supporting more local foods and brands, and just really questioning, where is this food coming from? Where is this, when you go to the restaurant, you can ask the chef, like, is this local? Like, is this, how much local do you use? And one of my dreams is to actually have like a rating system for Caribbean restaurants, sort of like, if you get 3 stars, if you support this much, or you have this much local integrated in your menu. And there's lots of ways that we can incentivize everyone within the community. And I'm hoping that with the right investments from however this, election turns out, that we can create an environment for something like that. So.
Yeah. My last question to you. Now, you are somebody that people are looking up to in the business space. You're part of YBTT now, great organization that has been helping a lot of people. For the people who are really struggling to navigate building a business within the rules, regulations of Trinidad and Tobago, what is your message to them to keep on trying to figure it out and keep on keeping on?
So, I, yeah, you, you can't, you literally like giving up is really not an option. Taking a different path is an option, which I think people think that a different path can look like giving up, and it's not necessarily true. So the first thing is that there's no crying in baseball. I don't know what the term is, right? There's no giving up. So I never think of that as an option. Like, and I also think that no one can stop the work and this avalanche and this snowball that we've created, effect that we've created. And I think that's when you're sort of, you've gotten to that point where you can protect yourself and sort of be a little more resilient in your space. So how can you strengthen yourself? So the first thing is that you are the person that's not going to give up. The person who shows up, the person who wins the Anthony Sabga Awards, is the person who remained. It's because we were the first online distribution company. We weren't the last online, it's we remained at that. And I think not giving up is the number one thing, but you cannot do this alone. I like I am Miss. Yes, we're all independent and we can have ChatGPT tell us what to eat and whatnot, right? But you know, when you get that call and you get that support from someone who really gets it or sees you.
That's the difference.
Be seen. Find spaces where you are seen, where you never have to shrink. And it's hard at first. And again, that's what we're trying to create at Market Movers. We're trying to create this environment where persons can, if you're in food and you're an SME, that you can, you know, find channels. And I always tell people, love your business, but do not fall in love with it. Like, do not. I've been in love. You've seen the red flags. We've all been there and we told ourselves all. And your business is a reflection of you. You have to stop blaming the economy and blaming the environment all the time. And I'm not saying that there aren't real issues that we're facing. But if you're not giving up, if you really love what you're doing, if you love your business and you love what you're doing, show up, find the answers, find the solutions. Every day, if someone tells me what the problem is, and I'm always like, how are we getting to the answer? What's the answer? Solution. And I used to think that my answer was the only answer. And I think that prevented me from sometimes solving problems in my business.
Yeah.
But yeah, what's the answer? And sometimes it doesn't come from you.
No, listen, that is beautiful and it's big. And you see the strength in yourself. That's the biggest reason why they tell you on the airplane, if something happens and the mask comes down, you put your mask on first before. And I love the fact that in the day and age that we are in, there are so many new ways for us to figure out problems, right? Even me making the decision to come to Thailand, I saw it like we have limitations in banking, whatever. I can break away from that. But because of the technology, I'm still able to do every single thing that I am doing. But I am in a better position to be able to do all of the things that I'm already doing, because nothing was ever based on my physical appearance to begin with.
Yeah.
So we are in these times. I don't think people look at technology enough in the Caribbean to solve a lot of our problems, because the first thing that we think of is technology. We don't want to touch it, or technology means the loss of jobs. And we just shy so far away from it that we're not embracing it to really solve a lot of the meaningful problems. But you have been doing that, and you are leading the way, and you're leaving a path, a blueprint for people to follow. Rachel, we thank you. We thank you. No, and people have been taking notice, you know. I stole some extra time today. I know you're a busy woman. Thank you for giving us 90 minutes of just pure gems, and you have really just shined a light on, again, things that need to happen within the agricultural space. Yes. In Trinidad, you know. Yeah. So, Rachel,
thank you so much for giving me this platform. Appreciate it, Karen, and hopefully I can visit sometime soon.
Absolutely, as yeah. Long as you're on this side of the world,
we'll look out for when the earthquakes are happening. Yeah. I don't know if you can catch that ChatGPT can alert me on when that won't be, so that I could.
Yo, man, this was like the first one in 100 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's again crazy.
Think up to shake up for things to change, and I think embrace change. Technology is just change, but it, you know, getting to that better side. And I think being able to change and adapt is a very key skill that we all need to learn.
So. No, it is, and the speed of adaptation, because you know what happened in Thailand? Again, this is an earthquake has not been felt in 100 years. They have not, they've built up their stuff enough to what they think they should or whatever, right? But this was that wake-up call. But what happened, and what I got to see in real life, I got to see earthquake solutionator, right? Our condo, I have to do an entire video on my condo. My condo has an app. And since the earthquake, they have been notifying us on all of the change that have been happening within the app. Communication, like I got like 12 notifications in one day about what engineers did, pictures, this, that, and the third. But here's the kicker. They then announced that you can have your units personally inspected by the property's engineers, right? You go into the app and you book you go into the app and you actually book the service within the app yourself. So all of these things are happening. And again, it's just great to kind of, you know, see it for ourselves.
I love it. And let's hope that we don't have to wait for the disaster to find the solutions every time. And it happens. But those who are prepared is really, you know, you're going to be ready for the next shakeup.
This is it. And again, Rachel, thank you for your time. You, we'll definitely catch up offline. We'll talk.
Bye. Have a great day.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.